No, in the NSABP R04 study, the oxal is given weekly?
In that study, it's given weekly. So the primary comparison was capecitabine versus infusional 5-FU. That took a long time to get through various review bodies, and it started to become a fairly pedestrian question because many people had already diverted to using capecitabine. But it still remains important to prove because you have to lower the dose of capecitabine from the, quote, standard systemic dose so much to be able to give it, that you really want to make sure that you're maintaining in a curative patient the same rates you get with the standard, which is infusional 5-FU. So I fully support completing R04 and not just simply having everyone get an oral capecitabine substitute.
And what is the dose and schedule of capecitabine in that study?
It's 825 per meter squared twice a day, 5 days out of seven, Monday to Friday. And so as the study was just about to be launched, in fact, the whole oxaliplatin issue came along, and many people, including myself, said this could be made better as a 2x2 study design, asking two important questions. So we will have the answer from R04 definitively, but I would say my guess is that the oxaliplatin combinations will at least have a better path CR rate. Whether that translates into long-term outcomes that we have for rectal cancer patients, which are many, including acute and late toxicities, sphincter preservation, which surgery they have, which is part of sphincter preservation, and overall survival is where NSABP R04 really comes into play. It's what the cooperative groups were meant to do, which is solidify and quantify the data.
What do we know about the safety and tolerability of adding oxali in the neoadjuvant setting with a fluoropyrimidine?
In most of the studies, in the weekly setting, there was more diarrhea, which is why they had more dropped doses. In the British trial, for example, they dropped the third week out, so they give it on week 1, 2, 4, 5. So if you look at the actual dose delivered, people who got biweekly or in the two studies where it was given at 1:30 just at the beginning of radiation, and in the other study they gave it twice, people actually got more oxaliplatin when given infrequently because they didn't have to have dose reductions and delays. And what's very important in treating the rectal cancer patient and combining chemotherapy is that as the medical oncologist working in a multimodal setting, you not interfere with the radiation therapist giving their treatment at what is considered standard dose and schedule. So if you had 6 treatment interruptions for hospitalizations and such, you may have an inferior outcome because the radiation was given in split course fashion unintentionally.
So at this point, if you have a patient who you're going to utilize oxaliplatin off protocol, what schedule do you use?
I usually use the weekly regimen, actually, and the protocol we currently have ongoing at Penn is a study looking at multiple different factors. Patients, in our institution at least, have a hard time getting started on radiation therapy just because the department doesn't have enough machines. So not a criticism, it's just a commentary that it can take as long as 2 to 3 weeks to get people set up and treated. So as a practical issue, for example, one of the reasons people do sandwich chemo radiation therapy in postoperative rectal cancer patients, it's not so much that we thought radiation should be delayed. It's that in the early trials, there was so many major violations in the radiotherapy fields that we felt central review was required. So the two courses of chemotherapy were there to delay the radiation so that a separate institution, for example, could review the films and make corrections before the radiation was given. Because it's of no use to a patient to go back and say, oh, you got inferior radiation, it's a protocol violation. This is treatment and in curative patients, so you clearly want them to get the best treatment. So the study involves getting capecitabine oxaliplatin, which recently was shown to be non-inferior to infusional 5-FU and oxaliplatin in the Roche trial, plus cetuximab. And they get 2 cycles of that before they start the radiation therapy. They then get, as in head and neck cancer, if you will, 5-FU. Most head and neck protocols drop 5-FU because of the mucositis, but they get capecitabine, as in the NSABP trial, plus oxaliplatin, plus cetuximab. So they get biologic and chemotherapy. So it's a little bit what's being done in head and neck cancer. So we've recruited our first 2 patients, and everybody gets some postoperative chemotherapy, but not very much because they've already gotten 2 cycles of CAPOX, if you will, plus cetuximab, and the equivalent of 2 more cycles of chemotherapy before they ever hit the operating room. And so basically, they will get a full 6 months of chemotherapy, but the vast majority of it is before their surgery. But what's interesting is that we put in all these biologic correlatives, which of course are imperative in putting any trials together. And this ties in a little bit with why it's hard to get our surgeons not to want to get the oxaliplatin, is because surgeons are very, they use their eyes, they see what they see and they feel what they feel. And when we give neoadjuvant therapy with oxaliplatin, the tumors shrink so rapidly frequently that there's nothing there. That's why they're path CRs. And so it's hard for them, looking back, whether they were using radiation alone or radiation and 5-FU, you know, they see what they see, like pornography. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. I think they intuit that the NSABP trial will be a positive trial, at least for tumor shrinkage.
That's fascinating.
So in our trial with the correlative markers, what we wanted to do were some biologic assays at the diagnosis, which we would have from the original biopsies, and then after the chemo cetuximab, and then the surgical specimen. And then look at changes that took place after exposure to oxaliplatin and cetuximab. And the problem is the first two patients had path CRs, and one of them had a path CR at the time of the second biopsy before radiation even started. So we won't have any longitudinal data. Patients are being censored because they're doing too well, but that's kind of a nice problem to have.
Hmm.